Margaret. I want to thank MoMA and UTEC for inviting me here to speak about. They had actually asked me to speak about modernism in Barbados as it relates to my practice, not just modernism in Barbados in general. Because actually, I think that there's very little modernism in Barbados. I think I should also explain to some of our colleagues from the mainland. I am really from Trinidad, and we always refer to people who come from South America as coming from the main. Because, you know, in our calypsos and things like that, you know, when you went down the main, it means that you went back to Venezuela. So I discovered that a number of our colleagues from the main know very little about these Anglophone islands, about their politics and their how they developed and what their being was. So I would just like to say that to them that Barbados is a very small island. It's 116 square miles. And it's at the bottom of the chain. Trinidad is also, it's just 300 miles away, and it's further south than Barbados. And Trinidad is actually touching Venezuela. One point is 3 miles away from Venezuela. So Barbados has always had a very stable democratic government system, and basically two party. There have been attempts to have other parties, but they never seem to work. So what I'm going to say is that, ladies and gentlemen, I've done modernist architecture in Barbados, and it really has not been always easy. Take a look at Barbados in 2008, and you will see a society embracing a pseudo-Palladian, retro-Victorian aesthetic. You will see Corinthian columns mock Venetian lagoons in tourist developments. Pavements lined with imitation gas lamps, and a new law court building now under construction, which seems meant to represent the Capitol building in Washington, believe it or not. There are, of course, modernist buildings in Barbados, but the coherent movements suggested by the term modernism denies their episodic and random occurrence. Modernist architecture has never become mainstream in Barbados. Today, it largely seems to be a closed chapter. Now, we as architects go through years of rigorous training to become architects, yet inevitably find ourselves fighting clients on the one hand and contractors on the other. Yet, in the smaller territories of the Caribbean, these trials are minor. Our real challenge is the cultural, social, intellectual, and financial climate that surrounds us. I returned to the Caribbean in 1966. After 10 years of study and practice in the United Kingdom. After qualifying as an architect, I had done a postgraduate course in tropical architecture under one of the pioneers in that field, Dr. Otto Koenigsberger. In addition to such formal training, I had traveled to some of the most famous sites of both classical and modern architecture, paying tribute to Brunelleschi, Mies van der Rohe, Le Corbusier, Louis Kahn, Oscar Niemeyer, and Felix Candela. With such preeminent examples in one's luggage, the realization of what was possible in Caribbean architecture 40 years ago was not surprisingly numbing to this newly qualified and hopeful returnee. Until the last decade of the 20th century, the scale of projects, climatic considerations, and the availability of finance did not permit architects in Barbados the use of structural steel in any large degree. It did not permit large expanses of glass because of the climate, the threat of hurricanes, etc. And also, of course, precast cladding elements, because everything has to be imported into Barbados. To serve the needs of a small-scale, low-tech economy, modernism, which of course evolved with and for large and rapid expanding economies, had to be modified. In the 70s, I set up a private practice in Barbados and took on a number of minor projects around the Southern Caribbean. We are so small that, you know, as architects, we have to operate throughout the region, from Guyana in the south to Antigua in the north. Jamaicans at that stage always sort of looked towards America and thought very little of us down there in the Caribbean. Small residential commissions at that time did open up a regional interpretation of modernism and allowed me to explore some of Koenigsberger's ideas of architecture in the hot, humid tropics. I have an example here of a house which I did in Guyana in 1970, which the main structural elements were twin timber beams. In Guyana, they produce a considerable amount of hardwood. So, you know, green heart is like structural steel almost. And it had twin timber beams and steel rolled sections as columns. This enabled me to lift the structure on a site which is prone to flooding. In Georgetown, which is a sort of alluvial plain, if there's floods. In fact, the Dutch saved Georgetown from itself when they went in there sometime back in the 18th century and built a whole series of dikes and sluice gates and things like that. Because Georgetown is actually below sea level. So this enabled me to lift the structure on a site prone to flooding, with a flat roof, wide verandas, a linear arrangement of rooms, allowing for cross ventilation. The building was no more than one room wide, so it allowed for cross ventilation. It was a young architect's homage, I suppose, to the Mises Farnsworth house. Here are the interior. You can see that's the width of the building. And these are these verandas. The other thing, of course, is that Guyana is not subject to hurricanes. It's too far south to be subject to hurricanes. So you can have these wide verandas in timber, which are not likely to be blown away by a hurricane. But now, you know, in those days, global warming was not an issue. They're telling me now that hurricanes are moving further south, because they had one in Brazil the other day, which is further south of Guyana. So I don't know how long this building is going to last. let me go back. So that was that building. I also, as I said, I was doing work in various islands. My native Trinidad, I also went to Trinidad, and the following year, a similar low-tech functional modernist aesthetic was applied to a house for an eminent doctor in Trinidad. This house was perched on the side of a mountain, or a hill, I suppose, with views of the Gulf of Paria. This house was a challenge to construct because the site was so sloping and we were so close to the edge that we had difficulty constructing it. And as you can see here, I had difficulty photographing it. In fact, I have never seen this elevation of the building because I could never stand back far enough to take a picture of it. And this building, as I said, it was very difficult to construct, but it was built of formed concrete and fair-faced concrete block, which is the material of choice in a lot of the islands. And what was achieved here was a quiet, well-shaded living volume, insulated from direct sunlight by very deep verandas. I love verandas. Somebody was asking yesterday why would we be doing buildings with verandas. And it allowed through ventilation. And the living volume was raised so that we had a slit of air which came through the top and took the hot rising air away. Rather the sort of what Königsberger used to call the chimney effect. So it allowed for that sort of through ventilation. Another house which I did now in Trinidad, I did this house for a friend of mine who's a structural engineer. So, you know, he was very happy when I suggested that what I was gonna do was a concrete frame building in which we can just sort of fill in things and so he was able to design all his cantilever beams and things like that. He loved doing this. And again, this was designed on a sort of linear principle because it is one room thick, and it was oriented to the east, so that all the wind came in through the east, and it was cross ventilation exhausting through the west. And so that was this house. I am not very conversant with making these sorts of presentations, and so all my slides are sort of sequential. I noticed that the other presenters who are much more experienced have a 4 and 5 slides on at the same time, but I don't know, I just didn't know. this house that I designed for my structural engineer friend. There we are. What I have to say now is that if in the Caribbean, in the early 70s, if it was fraught with frustrations for modernist architects, there was one significant cause for optimism. By 1966, the larger Anglophone colonies, Jamaica, Trinidad and Tobago, Guyana, and Barbados, had all become independent. And with independence, one hoped that there would be emerging the need for a new architecture which would express the beginning of a new era. Meanwhile, if one had presumed that a new administration keen to distance itself from its colonial predecessor and create its own legacy would be an avid champion of modernism, reality was quite, quite different. Especially in Barbados, where post-independent governments, though politically progressive, have tended to be culturally very conservative. For example, and I don't have any slides of these, I'm one of these architects, I don't know, what happens really is that I take a long time to do these projects, and I was very fortunate that I had clients who were prepared to wait for me while I was doing one project until I finished that project to do another one. But working on these projects, taking a long time, you get so fed up with them by the end that you never take pictures. A very experienced architect once said to me early on in my career, when you finish your projects, take your pictures and run, because they're going to change everything. So I never, so all of these pictures that you're seeing here are pictures that I have taken very recently, in fact, for this presentation. Okay. So what I was saying is that, you know, how culturally conservative the Barbadian governments have been. For example, to mark this island's independence in 1966, the administration commissioned a new and imposing Hilton Hotel. And they went to New York and got a New York firm to do this Hilton Hotel, which everybody was very proud of, and that was that. When the new administration came in after 10 years, the incumbent administration commissioned a new international airport. They went to a Canadian firm to do that. Both buildings were examples of what I would call utilitarian modernism. Yet, where the former government that had first brought the island to independence, when they returned to power in 1986, that government did not hesitate to commission a triumphal arch to commemorate 20 years of independence. And nobody in Barbados seemed to see the irony in all of that, you know? An ex-colony commissioning a triumphal arch to celebrate independence. What independence did do, however, was to open up the field, which in Barbados had entirely been governed by foreign architects. It opened up that field to a few locals. Now, when I went to Barbados, in fact, there must have been one Barbadian architect who was working in the Ministry of Communications and Works. All the other architects there were foreign, and maybe two. And I came in. But Barbados is a small country, and I'm from Trinidad, so I was a foreigner too. But I suppose I was lucky to be in the right place at the right time. For me, the majority of opportunities through the 70s up to the middle 90s came in the form of government and institutional commissions. The first that I did was a conference facility. Now, my good friend Wade McMorris did the headquarters of the Caribbean Development Bank, which had then been set up in Barbados. And this is a picture of the conference facility, which is next to there's your building. I don't know if you recognize it. And so I did this conference facility. Am I running out of time? Not yet. I don't believe you. She's pulling my leg. She said I have 2 minutes. So we did this conference center, and I did it in sympathy with Baden's building, entirely of off-form concrete. And I used sunshades to protect the windows from the sun. Those were windows that had to be opened. The areas that had to be air-conditioned obviously had no windows, so there were no sunshades. And interestingly, I have to go back. Oh, I can't go back. What's happened here? Help. I want to... High tech. Yeah, I have to go back to this first slide. What I did here was a building which had an internal courtyard, and I placed a wind scoop over the courtyard, oriented towards the prevailing winds, in order to deflect the winds into the rooms that had natural ventilation, a la Königsberger. When I went back to take these pictures, I discovered that they filled in the courtyard, blocked off the wind scoop, and then they painted all the face blockwork. Both in my building. Oops. And in Vader's building. So, in, you know, we both lost out there. So, this is the entrance to that little conference facility. And so there we are. Okay, so I must press on, because Margaret is sort of getting very... by 1979, the government of Barbados asked me to do a new general post office for them. This was a major project, because they had been thinking about doing a post office for 30 years before they came to me in 1979 and asked me to do this project for them. So the site was one block of on a main road that led from the harbor into the main part of Bridgetown. So they commissioned this building, and I said, well, I'm going to do this, but I'm not going to do this the way you think that you want. Because what they asked me for was a post office building, which had basically three functions. One was an administration, two was the sorting office for both letters and parcels, and then there was a post office, which was the only area that the public was admitted to. And you have to remember, this was in the days before emails and before Federal Express, so this was very important. So I decided that what I would do was to deconstruct this whole, or this requirement, into three separate buildings, and that I would place it on a podium, have underground parking and service to the administration, because there was only one way to get into this whole project, was along this main road that you're seeing here. And so I started off with that concept. And then to convince the government that this is really what they wanted, they said they weren't quite certain that this is really what they wanted. So to convince them, what I had to do is to ask them to allow me to employ the British Postal Services as a consultant to vet the design and see whether or not it was workable. So off I went to London with a roll of drawings to consult with the British Postal Services. They started scratching their heads and saying, well, we're not quite sure if it's going to work. But anyway, in the end, I convinced them that it would work. So I ended up with an administrative building, which is L-shaped. So it took up one corner of the block. And then I had the post office at the other extreme, which, as you would see, is there. This is the post office in front there. Administrative building behind it. Sequential, you see, I have to go back. Post office, and then the sorting office, which was at, it completed the square. And what it left me with was the ability to have on the raised platform an amphitheater, which I thought was very important. You know, when I was a student and I was hitchhiking in Europe, you know, if you met a girl that you fancied and you wanted to have an appointment, you'd say, meet me at the post office, and such and such. The post office was very important, you know. You have to remember that I went away to study architecture in 1956, you know. So, you know, anyway, and hitchhiking through Europe was, you know, quite a thing. So, and this was the post office. Of course, when it was, so what I did, it was I did everything in off-form concrete, you know, and I was sort of paying homage to Le Corbusier and, you know, travel to Unité d'Habitation, travel to Ronchon and so on and so on. So off I went. So it was a concrete, all the buildings were concrete frame, and those that were, the walls that were not glazed were ribbed. Panels, of precast panels, which, for my sins, I'm not going to do this in 2 minutes, I can tell you. For my sins were all cast on sight. And that was a real challenge. Very quickly, let me just shut up and run through. Amphitheater. Now, this amphitheater, I hasten to add, has not been used as much as I would have liked. And the planting and things like that has not been maintained. You know, this is the post office. The main street is running through in the back there. And these are just views. Margaret is kicking me under the table here. So that is the post office, and internally this is the only public area. It was very nice until we had bandits in Barbados after that. So we had to put up these bandit screens, because I never designed this building with bandit screens and things like that, you know. But the workers complained that, not that they had been attacked, but in case they were being attacked, I should put up bandit screens. So that's how one's architecture evolved. And I had a little fun with the exposed air conditioning ducts and things like that. Let me carry on. While I was doing this, now, I don't want to talk about the problems about these things, because by then we had overseas contractors to build it, and, you know, problems. We had contract determined, contract started again. Anyway, while I was doing this, the central bank called me and said they wanted to have a new central bank building. So I had to wrestle with this and turn my attention to the central bank design of a building. So eventually I came up with the central bank building as a building which, with the experience I had of the post office and the concrete frame and the paneling done locally, and so I said I can't go through this again. So what I finally came up with is a building which the bank wanted this building right in the middle of town, as close as possible as they could get. So the site is really congested. So I came up with this building, which was it's 12 floors. It's really a square donut. And what I did is I took all the secure areas, the vaults and things like that, and I had them at ground level, 3 floors of that. And then I straddled the secure areas with 8 floors of administrative offices. And I then, what I had is these towers, which are of slip forming. I slip formed the towers, and 3 towers in each corner provided structural support and they housed all the services. Everything, all the services were through. So the bridges became open offices. And again, they were very narrow, so that you could have through ventilation. And then on the eastern side, where the prevailing winds come from, I ripped out some of these floors to allow even more entrance. This is just some of these corners which between it. So that is what you get. You get this is the view from 12 floors up, down into this courtyard with the wind coming in through the eastern end. And then I took out a floor here where you see this little workman working here, and created a throughway. So I didn't want to, you see, all the buildings in Bridgetown were 3 stories. What I did is I left the secure areas at 3 stories, had a throughway, and then had the other buildings above it. So it sort of, well, you judge for yourself. This is the internal courtyard. So what I did, I have to mention this internal courtyard, because I was very happy, because I went to Brazil and I convinced Bolle Marx that he should come and do the plaza outside of the building. In the corner there is the main cathedral. So we had the main cathedral, you had the Masonic Lodge, which was very important in Barbados society. And here I come along, and I had an old tamarind tree that was 100 years old that I was determined to keep. And I had to sort of wrap the building around this. And then I went to Bule and I said, Bule, I want you to do this. Surprisingly, he said, yeah. And he got on a plane and he came to Barbados with his assistant, Tabaco. And he designed this courtyard, this plaza for me. And so here we are, you know, with this plaza. Now, just a little amusing aside, if you don't mind. Some years later, the secretary of the bank called me and said, Mervyn, we got a problem. I said, what is it? I went to see him. He said, the secretaries in the bank are complaining that they're going to go on strike unless you do something about that courtyard design. Because I had imported basalt from Brazil to do this courtyard. And they're complaining that their shoe heels are getting caught in between the basalt. So I want you to change this design so that they could have a smooth, easy path from the car park to the entrance. So I thought, well, I had no intention of doing that, but how can I solve this problem? Luckily, sadly, Bule Marx had died a year before then. And the Museum of Modern Art were having a retrospective of his work. So I said, my problem is solved. I got hold of the president of the Preservation Society, and we went to the bank and we said, look, this design is a national treasure. You cannot touch anything on it. And they accepted that argument. To the young artists, you're going to fight for what you believe in, and don't give up. Just a few quick words about the experiences I had of course, needless to say, the bank later on went and changed this design of this internal courtyard is not Bole's courtyard. They went and changed it. Because apart from anything, what had happened is after doing all of this, I'm running out of time. So I just gonna have to speed up. Okay, so that was the central bank. I had to go to Belgium to get glass reinforced concrete panels because I wasn't prepared to have concrete panels made locally. So all those panels are concrete. And then what the bank did, this is the entrance to the bank. And then this is the only area where people go into the public is allowed into the bank. But the bank, they commissioned a 500-seat recital hall to this bank, which I also did. And we placed it on a site next to the bank. And it was connected by an open terrace, which spanned a public road. So that is the recital hall there, behind that box, and this is that. Okay, rushing on very, very quickly. What then happened is that, with the experience with glass reinforced concrete panels, I was able to do a whole set of buildings. This was another small and very economical building I did with glass reinforced concrete panels and glass curtain walling. And then, there we go. Oh dear, all right. Let me give me 2 seconds, just give me 1 minute. So that was that, and there's a whole story about this minimalist piece of sculpture which I did, which I'm going to have to keep another time. I went back to the Caribbean Development Bank because they called me back and I did another building for them there. And then I went on to do an insurance company building, which was done. And that was it, you know. And so, Margaret, you're not nice. Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, you will understand the time crunch, and we will have to Claire to bring Morgan back. It's the first time he's been here. The students are smiling. I think you woke them up. So you can definitely do that.